like somebody who has billions of dollars, they're probably not looking at their bank account very often because it's really no need to, versus somebody who lives paycheck to paycheck, where every penny has to be counted so that there's food on the table and there's shelter and there's heat. But two very different approaches to that. One can have discipline, but it's absolutely not required. The other one cannot survive without discipline.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operation. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today, I have a pleasure to host my friend, Akshay Varma, the COO of Spotdraft. Well, we've known each other for a couple of years now, maybe a little bit longer. You've made an incredible move just recently from head of legal operations Coinbase, now the CEO of Spotdraft. Let's start with earlier on, like the background of you know, how you got here, and then obviously that last move, which is very intriguing for people to learn about. But let's start at the beginning.
Yeah. I often describe my career as like this zigging and zagging, and which is really counterproductive to a class that I teach for law students around career pathing, where we talk about intentionality and planning and all the steps in the plan that you should think about and implement. But the reality of my career is I fell into a lot of different things. And I wish I could say it was planned or intentional. It really wasn't. But I think one thing that I will really credit myself for is seizing the opportunity when it was in front of me. You know, like it was that old adage that success is where preparation meets opportunity, or luck is where preparation meets opportunity. I think about my career evolution far more in those terms than I will anything around I plan this or I plan that, other than going to law school and becoming a lawyer, which is something that I wanted to do for a very long time. Going back to my teenage years, practicing environmental law, something I wanted to do for a very long time. And then had an existential crisis in early 2012 where I was like, oh God, I don't want to do this anymore. And oh my God, what am I going to do? I worked my tail off. Like the whole plan was to do this and I don't like it. It's not just that I don't like it. Like it's revolting to me. Like it was that, it was like it's the visceral reaction. It was awful. And so I was very lucky to stumble upon Axiom a few months after that happened, got to know them, their team. And that's really what drove me to the business side of the law, was that first role at Axiom doing business development and consulting for what then was a pretty, I'd say, mid-stage startup at the time, 50-ish, 80-ish million in revenue. Had been around for a few years, but even back then, my conversations with clients were very much explaining to them who we were, what we did, how we did it, the model, and all those kinds of things. Now that's a very standard conversation everywhere, right? We're 12 years past that now. But that really got me into the business side of the law, which then took me to Facebook. It took me to Coinbase to head up their legal operations teams. Saw a lot of how technology and legal technology should really have been leveraged internally at those organizations. And all of the, whatever, 25 years that I've been doing this, like it all has set me up to be able to take on this role at Spotdraft as their COO. So that's how it unfolded. And I'm not a person that has a lot of regrets, and I don't think I have any regrets in my career choices or my career moves. Maybe that's the benefit of hindsight. Maybe that's a level of success that I feel like I've attained. So I feel good about the choices that I made. Plenty of anxiety ridden moments along the way too, but it's not fun if you're not having that.
Oh yeah. It's not important enough if you're not having it.
Yes.
You gotta be started with it. It's seizing the opportunity. You still need to be making the shot. You still need to be pulling the trigger. And that is, if you ask me, where it has nothing to do with luck, it's not only being able to identify the opportunity, it is going after them. Honestly, this is such a common topic sometimes. A lot of people I end up having in this podcast are people driving change too. And we can talk more about that, but those 12 years is also a very interesting time frame of how a lot of this entire concept of mobilizing You know, because mobilizing operations, mobilizing businesses into technology, into new, more modern type of methodologies, is the peak of it, really. Because if you think about transformation, digital transformation is a phrase of, what, 30 plus years.
Yeah.
But it started from someone not writing anymore on a piece of paper and putting it in a spreadsheet. Instead of physical spreadsheet, or like instead of physical word processor, a digital word processor. That's like the most basic of the most, you know, it's like fundamentals. A lot of where we're seeing now the quote unquote digital transformation in the past decade is a lot more about how we work and how we leverage some of those innovations. And I think it's interesting that you were able to be an end user of it first.
Yeah.
And then you move to like behind the curtain.
Yeah. Honestly, I think it was a big draw for SpotDraft in terms of the experience that I brought to the table, but it was also a huge draw for me because even at Axiom in the early days, we were developing our own CLM tool, so to speak. Like we were developing our own contracting technology. It was more for kind of review and turning what we call unstructured data, which is a provision, a natural language provision in a contract, and turning it into structured data, which back then was done manually. So with digital tools, but really still done manually, yeah. Where you read the contract as a PDF. So it's already digitized. You read it as a PDF and you look at the provision that you need to analyze and you turn it into a one or a zero or a yes or a no or something of that nature, which is not something that the legal profession had really done before. You send the contract to a lawyer for analysis and you get back a 2-page memo about what the contract what you can and cannot do under the contract. But that's not particularly helpful for the business. That doesn't really help. Is this contract assignable or not? Yes. That's a yes or no question. And I'm oversimplifying the query here. Yeah. It gets more complicated, but that should be a one or a zero. It should be a binary or it should be a yes or a no. And that data should get fed back somewhere so that you can take action on it. To me, that really encapsulated like the building of the technology. So I've been around in that world for a long time. So bringing all of that to this role, to the company, and to this part of the market was particularly exciting.
What do you think if you do need to, you know, some people, and I guess for a good reason, right? It's definitely exciting to see some of the progress in the last year or so. I feel, at least from what I'm seeing in those markets, whether it's legal, whether it's finance, procurement, whether it's HR, IT, some of those areas where we're not as advancing as fast as marketing tech and sales tech and developer tools like the decade before. Again, you sort of like we're in the middle of it as a consumer of them too, right? In Facebook and Coinbase, started as a supplier of it, moved to being a consumer of it, now back into the supplier side of it. Where do you think this is heading? Do you think this is the peak? Do you think this is the beginning? Do you think this is the middle? Where's the wave?
Yeah, I'd say it's closer to the beginning than any level of peak because our profession, the legal profession, the bar for improvement is so low. It's so low because lawyers have done things manually for 150 plus years. Everything was paper. Everything was from scratch. Even when I was practicing law, it's not like we had a process of templates for doing things like discovery responses and things like that. At times, I'd be able to go to another file for another client at my law firm and from iManage, get a Word copy and then cut and paste some things that made sense for my discovery responses or drafting, whatever you're drafting, that's fine. That was the first like very basic AI tool there. So we had those things, but the level of process improvement and automation and the leveraging of these kinds of tools, like I think that's the reason that legal technology has really proliferated, particularly in the last 5 to 7 years. You've seen it build up as far back as I'd say even 2003 or four with e-discovery tools. Like that was the first big thing and then document management. But now you've seen this massive boom in legal technology. It's because everything was done manually in our profession. Whereas you go to other disciplines in coding, software, things of that nature, is like the very nature of doing things was to accelerate and enable through technology. So you had this ethos and this culture in those professions that did not exist in lawyers, right? Lawyers value effort, they value time, they value just hard work. And so why would you try to find efficiency? The big change in all of that for me, and really for our industry, happened in 2008 and 2009 with the crash, where all of a sudden, scarcity in terms of resourcing for companies and therefore legal departments was a real thing. This wasn't like a, oh, I'm hungry, I can't eat what I used to eat. This is, hey, I'm hungry, there's no food in the cupboard. Yeah. What are you going to feed on? And then you get your feet on your own body fat. Getting seen analogy, but it makes a lot of sense. So you have to start figuring stuff out on your own. Your own body has to figure it out.
I don't think people talk about it enough. There is something about, you know, the black swan type of concept, right? Something that comes in and completely like flip the market.
Yep.
And what I find interesting is looking at the last decade, being involved in some of those markets in the last decade. And again, it's kind of obvious if you understand the definition of a black swan. But the funny thing to me is that people miss marking things as black swan too. They would be like, this is now a big, you know, that's a black swan. That it's actually not. And then something else is actually what's becoming the black swan, which is, again, it's in the definition of what a black swan is. You're not supposed to recognize it until it's too late, kind of thing. Yeah. But I feel it myself with AI and ChatGPT a little bit. And I kind of wonder from your perspective too, because you moved, there's something about it that feels like to me, everyone are freaking out on the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And it will actually come from a complete, it's not that there's not going to be a big event, but it's, I'm not sure it will come from the, because then it's too obvious. Does that make sense? And legal is exceptionally in that bucket in which it's almost like obvious. If you talk to VCs, if you talk to folks, like kids that are out of college or whatever, and like trying to build stuff with AI, like the first thing they go after is, oh, let's draft contracts automatically. You know, it started with let's write blogs, but that's, it's too obvious. And then you're like, okay, what is next? Okay, let's draft the contracts. But it's like, that's too obvious. There's something else. I'm just curious because you're in front of it.
I just went to a conference in Amsterdam called Lexpo. And it's a legal technology conference for most of Europe, a lot of European attendees across the region, not just in the Netherlands. And 90% of the speakers and the content was AI. Everybody's talking about it. We've been hearing about it, particularly in our profession. And then when I say AI, I'm talking about generative AI. Let's be very clear, I'm talking about generative AI.
Yeah.
Since last spring, so spring of 23, when ChatGPT really broke onto the scene and everybody was like, oh my, it's going to fundamentally change things, it's going to fundamentally change how we do things. I do think that's true. I do think it's fundamentally going to change the way that we go about doing things. But the reality of how that manifests, I think, is not going to be all that different than what we've been thinking about doing for a while. Okay, so the impact of it is going to be significant because there's going to be a lot of dollar figures that are attached to that impact. And those dollar figures have to do with who's in the market. And so what market this creates and how big that market is. It's going to be dollar figures related to how much money the users of this technology will save in OpEx as a result of using it. So those dollar figures will be real and they'll be big. But I'll just use one of our tools as a very clear example, which when you really boil it down, it's a really cool tool. I love it. It's fantastic and it works really well. But is it a black swan? No, I don't think it's a black swan. It's really cool. Again, this goes back to my earlier point around like the bar is so low in our profession that advanced math looks like freaking magic. And that's what this is, math and statistics. That's what these language models are. And so our tool, you can take your playbook for contracting, you can take a third-party agreement, you feed it through the tool and it gives you red line suggestions, and then you can fire that off to the other side. So what would have taken you manually to read through a contract, know your playbook fairly well, and then redline it on Word Let's say that takes you an hour on a basic contract. This takes you 5 to 10 minutes to push it through, validate the output, make your own changes, and then send it off. Okay. That's a 90. Did I do that correctly? Is that 90%? No, it's not. It's 80%.
No.
It changes the way that you view your work. You fundamentally change the speed at which you do it. You can do more. You can do other things. That is a massive level of impact. Don't get me wrong. But is it really magical? I don't think so.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at Tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
Magic, by definition, is something you just can't explain. Or it's a science that you can't explain kind of thing, or you don't understand, or whatever the quote goes. I agree with you. I think what's interesting as part of it, though, is, and you touched on it, how rapid where it scares people, or for the people that tends to scare versus, or excite people, for the people that tend to get excited, is how rapid will a technology change the definition of your work, right? So I had a conversation with my GC actually a couple months back where we were having like a friendly chat, and he asked me about it, like, what do I think about some of those things? I told him, look, I don't pay you to review my NDAs. That is not what I pay you for.
Yeah,
I pay you because I need to call you sometimes and ask like for advice. And to all honestly, sometimes just make sure I'm covering all bases, right? Yeah. Just make sure that there's another someone that I can share the accountability with. And I don't think people fully understand that, because that, by the way, is very true about writing code too. Because the other place, other than like drafting contracts, is write code, right? Let's use generative AI to just write code and write code and write code. And some of the demos, at least, and some of the tools are actually pretty good at that point. But the difference is, if there's this issue in the system at 2 a.m., who do I call? I need to call someone. If there's an urgent customer need, if there's an urgent security issue, whatever it is, who do I call? Someone needs to be accountable to those things, because at the end of the day, we are all just helping businesses. You help businesses to help businesses. We are all like just help each other for each other. It's all fake. It all goes down. If there's no people, none of this exists, right? We all just help each other do things that help other people that then by the end of it will help you. And so the reality of it is, how fast does it force an individual to rethink their role? It's exciting because I think there's too much nonsense in the way things operate, too much bureaucracy, too much red tape. But my company is really trying to fight. But on the essence of it, it is exciting if you embrace it. And this is the interesting thing to me about lawyers, like you said earlier, like changing behavior and is always like almost a lagging group, but it's almost like they're now putting on the spotlight to basically say, what are you going to do?
Yeah, like, I don't know what percentage it is, but it's a large percentage. By some counts, it's probably 70, 80% of what in-house lawyers do is not lawyering. It's not lawyering. It doesn't require judgment. It doesn't require relationships. It doesn't require the things that I think we would fundamentally call human. Let's all agree that lawyers are humans. Let's all agree on that. So it doesn't fundamentally require those things, but it takes up so much time. And that to me is really, when you look at that reality, that I really think that you're right. People fall into two categories. Those that are like, hey, this is really cool, we could do better now. And those that are there like, oh my gosh, where's my job? This is going to ruin everything. I do, not to get too philosophical, I actually think that's a choice. I think that's a choice people make, okay? But the reality of it is, from a business perspective, that 80% of work, I mean, let's just say it's 80%, maybe it's 70, maybe it's 50, whatever the number is, it needs to be done differently. And that's not a new goal. That's not a new tenet. It's not a new statement. We've been saying that for at least 20 years, if not longer. Legal operations, to me, at its very core, has that as a mindset. We can do better because we will do this differently. Or if we do this differently, it will be better. And so that's why, to me, like technology, and Jen McCarron talks about this a lot. And I fought this for a little bit when she really started saying it consistently, because it's not true, but I actually think it's true. Legal operations now is fundamentally about technology, which is not to de-emphasize the people and the process. You cannot de-emphasize those things. But now it is fundamentally about technology, and you cannot be a good legal operator without really understanding the role that technology needs to play in your job, in the department and companies that you serve. I guess I'm going to change my earlier answer. I think we're very much on the upswing in this. And again, we're nowhere near the peak. I think there's so much cool stuff that's going to happen. It's going to happen with AI. It's going to happen outside of AI. I actually think it's going to be for the better. I'm an eternal optimist, so I'll probably almost always say this anyway. It's going to be for the better for everybody involved, because if you take that one person whose large chunk of time is a lawyer, whose large chunk of time is done doing non-lawyer things, much of the non-lawyer things and tasks are actually not fun for them. So if you can take those off their plate, it doesn't mean they have less to do. This is another thing I want to be very clear on. It doesn't mean they have less to do. It means that they can do more strategic work. And the more that I think people start looking at the use of technology from that lens, I think the angst should start to go away. Because then it really turns into something you say, oh, what other cool strategic work is there? Things we haven't even thought of yet. I think I could go all the way down the chain to law students who become first-year lawyers who are doing all of this mundane work right now. Guess what? 5-10 years from now, they're upskilled. That's progress, right? Kids are taller now than their parents for the most part. Generally speaking, that's the way it works. You look at my family. My gosh, my nephew is 6'3". I've been the tallest guy in my family for years. He is 6'3". He's huge, right? So first-year students and first-year lawyers are going to be more upskilled. And then that's just going to push more and more cool work up the value chain. And if you could look at technology and legal technology from that lens, how can you not get excited? I really want to ask somebody that. Like, how could you not get excited by that?
Fear of change. But I think that's the two buckets, right? That's the two buckets. But yeah, I agree. And I think, and I've said it before here too, but change is coming whether you want it or not, right? So it is a choice. I cannot agree more with that. Yeah. It's a choice of what you want to do about it. It's a very good point, and I think it's a good way to think about it. You know, maybe just switching off for maybe last kind of question around that sort of career trajectory you had. What do you think is very similar and what is very different than you even mentioned head of legal ops or head of ops organization, big companies, Facebook obviously is massive. How is that different or similar to now, like running, being a CEO, running a more business-oriented unit in a smaller company?
In some ways, the job now, and we're 210 people, which would be by far the smallest legal department I've ever worked in as a whole. Right? Like when I left Facebook, it was 2,000 people in the legal department. When I joined Coinbase, I think it was around 400 plus people in the legal department, including compliance and things. So that's already much larger than my entire company. But the intensity and the demands of this current role far outweigh anything that I've ever done in the past. So that's been an interesting shift and an interesting dynamic. It's not like I trained to be a COO. I didn't train to be a COO. It wasn't on my radar. But there's no way that I could be doing this job right now without having gone through the experience of the last 20 years, but especially of the last 6 years at Facebook and at Coinbase. So part of my remit at SpotDraft includes our entire kind of client delivery or customer delivery team. So that includes our implementation team, our integrations team, our legal operations team. They're the ones that build out all of the templates and workflows and do all the testing before we go live with a customer. And it's a team of about 30-ish lawyers in India. So that part of my remit is that. And so that would call that kind of technical skills that I've gained over time. But then there are a lot of other things which I really enjoy, like the people team. I oversee the people team. Okay. Legal operations as this discipline within legal operations, that doesn't really exist. But for me, I was always so interested in learning how to be a good manager, learning how colleagues work better together, learning how teams function better together, and then learning how companies are going to succeed and not do well. And what does it take? That I worked very closely with the HR teams at both Facebook and at Coinbase. And those were heavily resourced, both with talent and people and with information. And so I learned a lot of those things. And so I really wanted to make sure that I had that here at SpotDraft, because we cannot succeed as a company without paying really important attention to our people. So there's kind of the skill sets that I gained over time, just as a core part of my job. And then there were things that I never really oversaw as a function, but that I was really interested in. And now being able to oversee those at a small company, that's been a really nice change. It's intense. Like, HR is not for the faint-hearted, but I love it. And having the ability to really further develop my judgment around those issues, but then also test some of my ideas at the company around those things, that's a lot of fun. That's like building, but also testing yourself and growing at the same time.
It's funny. It's like a little bit closing the loop on the body that eats its own fat.
Yeah.
Hear me out for a second. Mm-hmm. You're in a bigger company. There's like multiple people with the same job that are literally trying to do one thing.
Yeah.
And the smaller you get, it is almost a cliche, kind of like more fit, more nimble, but it's not because you necessarily want to or it's comfortable. It's the opposite. It's like
the reality.
You just have to. And I personally think that it's a very healthy thing to do. Learn from the fundamentals in a bigger company, but then jump into a smaller company. It can be a 500 people company, a 200 people company, or a 30 people company, but it is essentially, it will put a different spin on what you think. But having that fundamentals is always, every time I'm hiring folks that had both the big company experience and the smaller company experience, it always end up being more successful in their job, by the way, compared to people that had only one of those.
It gives you a different perspective. There's an aspect of legal operations around scarcity and driving value out of scarcity, which is a reality at smaller companies. Like, you can't function with a surplus of anything because you don't have the resources. So I think that sets you up really nicely. And then there's this aspect of just discipline. And big companies are by nature very undisciplined because they have the luxury to be, right? Yeah. It's like somebody who has billions of dollars, they're probably not looking at their bank account very often because it's really no need to. Yeah. What do you need discipline for? There's a limitless like supply of resources versus somebody who lives paycheck to paycheck, where every penny has to be counted so that there's food on the table and there's shelter and there's heat. And then hopefully you have a little bit of extra money to do some fun things. And all of those things are really important, but two very different approaches to that. One can have discipline, but it's absolutely not required. The other one cannot survive without discipline. And again, this is like immigrant story, coming to this country, like we had nothing. I grew up with scarcity as part of my life. And so I very much enjoy that scarce. I thrive in that. I'm the guy who does like fasting and things because I think depriving yourself intentionally of things is a really good way to stay strong and to stay disciplined, both mentally and physically. And so I think I bring a lot of that to the table in a situation where there's lack of resources and scarcity is a real thing. I think it's critical.
Not to go too personal, it's a big question. And again, we've talked about it in the past on different situations, you know, both being immigrants, but you just mentioned also owning HR and people operations as part of your current role. It is very hard. And being a CEO, I see it obviously from the top, where that same feeling, because you come with an immigrant, where you come with that mindset, when you start a company, the company is young, it is by definition with that mindset. How do you pass it along to the next generation, right? To your kids in personal life, to the next round of people coming to a company? Because your goal is to succeed. It's the same. That's what's like crazy about it, both in business and in life. Your goal is to succeed in a way that does not require the next round of people, whether again, it's your next generation, or to be in that situation. But you know inside that the only way to maintain the success is to have that struggle. So that's, again, it's a big topic.
It's a great topic. It's something as parents, my wife and I talk about often because our kids are growing up in a luxurious lifestyle. Like they're very privileged. And just reminding them of that on a regular basis is not particularly helpful. But it comes out when we're acting bratty, obviously, it comes out as parents. And creating an artificial kind of scarcity, I don't think is particularly helpful either.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't genuine, it doesn't stick.
Yeah. And which is why, as companies grow and they become successful, you lose this. So my wife worked at Facebook very early on, it's 300 people.
Oh, wow.
And they had this, they had no revenue. They had funding and then likely no revenue, right?
Yeah.
So she grew up in that world out of law school, like that was her reality. And so she saw that startup world. I talked to her about these issues often. And then obviously now, with $150 billion in revenue. And so I started there in 2018, very different company, huge, right? By the time like I left, it was like 65,000 employees. Scarcity is not a word that is used at companies like that. So you lose that. And then who do you hire? You don't hire people who understand that or who even value that. So it starts changing the very culture of your company.
You see that. You see that in the big companies. Absolutely. You see that now. You don't need to be, you know, you just look at it. It's not the same.
Yeah.
They're not the same.
I think a lot of lawyers struggle with this because scarcity is not a thing in the legal world. And at law firms, the only scarcity that really exists is the work that's coming in. That's really the only scarcity that exists. And unless a client imposes a scarcity on the law firm, the mentality of scarcity does not exist. So who goes in-house? Law firm lawyers. In-house companies, in-house departments are still not hiring out of law school. They have to unlearn some of that, and the best ones do, but a lot of them don't. And they go through the ranks, they become GCs and CLOs without really understanding how to work within a scarce framework. And so that's why you have the kind of opportunity, because this is really what it is, particularly for legal technology, you have the kind of opportunity that we do right now and for the foreseeable future to really improve that dynamic. And to me, that's what legal technology is about. That's what legal operations is about. And that's what makes it really fun for me.
To finish up, maybe I want to ask you about, I always like to ask an advice you got early in the career. I want to though circle back on our last point for a second, because there was a quote from Chris Rock that I learned one of the once kids where he with Seinfeld, they had this thing as a show about comedian in cars getting coffee. I don't know if you saw it. It's a great show.
Yeah.
So he has a quote there that I'm still using till this day about this topic where Seinfeld asked him, what do you do when your kids are acting like they own the world? And how do you deal with that? Being telling him like, Chris Rock, you're being a successful millionaire. How do you do it? He said, oh, it's easy. Every time they asked if daddy, are we rich? His answer was, I'm rich. You're not rich. I'm rich.
I love that.
So I think there's something there to take with you in many ways. Yeah, we are comfortable, but I am comfortable. I work hard to be comfortable. You still need to prove yourself.
Oh, dude, it's so true. We went on a vacation about a year and a half ago to this all-inclusive resort in Mexico. And my younger son, we're going down to eat. And he's like, daddy, can I just get anything from the restaurant? I was like, yeah. He's like, is it free? That's the way his brain works. We're not handing over money in the moment to get that food. So in his mind, it's free. I was like, no, dude. I was like, nothing is free. How do you think we're here? He's like, I don't know. I was like, he's going to be great with his money just because that's just the way his brain works. I just have to be more intentional about it. My parents didn't have to be intentional, really, because it was the reality. I have to be far more intentional. And I think that's the same for people in our roles.
Yeah, exactly. Any good advice? You've got you know, through your career that you feel like were impactful, worth paying forward?
Yeah, I think there have been a lot of, I've been very fortunate to have had some really good mentors and sponsors and managers, people that I have in my kind of smaller circle of trust that I reach out to for things. One of the most important pieces of not just advice, but this is somebody who walked the walk and did a lot of work around it, was just how important and how much intention and attention you need to pay to the people side of the equation. Because to your point earlier, like, we are people helping people help people do things. That's what we are. We're not a bunch of robots who can run independently. Maybe that's Skynet's down the road somewhere. Maybe. Who knows? Maybe we're all becoming obsolete at some point. I don't really worry about those things. But for now, no, absolutely not. This entire planet, all these, they're all run by people. And so you have to pay really important intention and attention to the people side of the equation. I don't think I appreciated that enough early on in my career. And I don't think I can pay enough attention to it now and give it enough kind of resourcing. So that's how much that kind of learning lesson had an impact on me.
And I'll agree more. Well, man, this was an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for sharing everything. If people want to nerd out with you, reach out. Is that LinkedIn? Yeah. Where can they find you?
LinkedIn is a great place to find me. I post often. I love it when people engage with my posts too. It's like, it's a fun conversation to have. Yeah, would love to connect with folks on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. It was good to have you.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.